Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Hey, listen, let's get this out of the way. Guys, we're going to be off next week.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about that, but we tried to break our necks to get that one more episode, but we're going on spring break next week.
Yeah.
Together. So we're just not going to be able to get you an episode in time. So I'm sorry about that.
Sorry. It's mostly my fault.
Yeah, Elena's fault entirely.
Because I'm too lazy, Candace says. I'm just kidding.
We are both like the busiest people. I know I say this all the time, but like we need to give something up in our lives, but we don't want to give up the podcast.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, so we work really hard for you guys.
Yeah.
I promise we do.
And we do enjoy getting together and talking about it.
But we really do. Maybe we'll post some things to our stories.
Yeah, we can do that.
While we're in the woods.
While we're having cousin time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anywho, well, should we just butter ourselves up and slide down into this case?
Come on, let's do it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this one's a... I always say that, but it's... honestly, you're just like, I can't believe this happens, but...
Oh, no.
I think it's good that I'm still surprised that things happen.
Okay.
No matter how exposed I am
These
cases.
I can agree to that.
Okay. September 8th, 2002, a gentleman took his fishing pole out to Turnbull Creek, located at Kingston Springs, Tennessee.
There's the fisherman.
It's always a fisherman.
Yeah.
Or a dog walker.
Yeah.
So he wanted to go see if anything was biting. You know, just have a nice, relaxing Sunday morning.
The sun was probably shining.
The sun probably wasn't even up yet.
Oh, okay. What time was it?
You know how those fishermen get out there and they like to sneak up on them fish and be like...
Well, no, it's getting the good spot.
Oh, getting the good spot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, apparently Turnbull Creek in Tennessee was a great spot for fishing. But, you know, this man soon realized he wasn't alone. And I'm not talking about the fish.
Oh.
As he made his way to pick out the perfect spot, he saw a red Jeep Cherokee partially submerged in the water.
What?
This area of the creek is not right off the road.
Oh.
Or anything. Like, he was like, what? Whoa.
How did this get here?
I mean, it's not like you would expect to see a car in the water.
This doesn't make sense.
I know. He was like, so he didn't see how this could have accidentally happened.
Sure.
So as he is approaching the vehicle, he goes around the driver's side and there's a woman floating in the water next to the car.
Oh.
On the driver's side.
Oh no.
Yeah. It's clear to him that she's, you know, gonna need more help than he could provide her and probably past help. So he called 911 and waited for police to arrive. Dixon County Sheriff's Office and the TBI, Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, arrived at the creek to find the victim still floating face up next to her car, just as she was found by the fisherman, no signs of life whatsoever.
Wow.
She was clothed, and first responders noted that the back of her shirt was torn. She had significant injuries to her body, bruising, cuts, scrapes. Her head had clearly been bleeding. Now get this. As the investigators searched the bank of the creek for any sign of maybe how the car came to be in the water.
Okay, so like skid marks.
Yeah, skid marks are like holes in the grass or, you know, whatever. They found the victim's hair. Well, they believed it was her hair because it was the same color.
Okay.
But finding hair in grass is like finding a needle in a haystack.
Well, yeah.
I mean, isn't that amazing that they found her hair? So they're like, so she was not in the car
right
when it went in.
Because first thought would be like, okay, the car went in, she crawled out
of
the vehicle.
Or she did this on her own. Like, or she maybe she drove down there and tried to kill herself.
Okay.
Or something like that.
That's a logical thing to think.
Yeah, I mean, you try and make sense of this weird situation that you see.
Yeah.
So discovering the victim's identity wouldn't take them much effort because the car registration found in the glove box of the vehicle belonged to 34-year-old Leanne Mangrum. So Leanne Smith Mangrum was born November 19th, 1967 in Dixon County near Nashville, Tennessee. It's the kind of place, Lena, that you would visit and be like, well, I'm moving there.
Yeah. I love it here.
It's a bit rural, but it's also beautiful scenery. Mm. The kind of place where you know everyone and they know you. And it seems like you might just be related to everybody. You know the type of town where you're born and you never leave?
Yeah.
I won't go on. I won't go on because Lena's like, Lena, come back. She just left the room. She's packing her bags. I'm just kidding. I would never let her leave. I would lay in front of the moving truck.
I believe that. I totally believe that.
I would. I would strap myself to the front of it and be like,
you know what? I should have done that the few times that you left me. Okay.
So Leanne was born there and spent her whole life there. And after high school, she met a man named Terry Mangrum, who she fell in love with and married. And in such a small town, with not a ton of stuff going on, she wanted to settle down and have babies. Same. Like, I'm not going to college.
Yeah.
I don't need anything else. I'm just going to have babies. The couple had two children, Terry Jr. and Alicia. And Terry Sr. worked for his family's company, which had him on the road quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, this is a very rural place and not much as, you know, in the way of job opportunity. So he kind of had to have this job, to be on the road. And, you know, after a while, they grew distant.
Aww.
I mean, the marriage kind of fizzled out. It was tough for Leanne to do it all on her own most of the time. You know, the school pickup and drop off, all the housekeeping. And then on top of that, while he's gone, all of his responsibilities. So the trash and the fixing the toilet. And, you know, it's just, it's tough.
Yeah.
Life is tough and it's better when you have a partner that can help out.
Yeah, sure.
So, and I think the distance also just kind of drove them apart. Kudos to all you single, all the single ladies and single dads out there. Like, I'm drowning most of the time and I have a really supportive partner. I just can't imagine doing it all on your own. Terry Sr., though, was not a great partner when he was around. So, the Mangrums divorced in 1999 and Leanne moved her and her kids to nearby Nashville for a fresh start. I say nearby. In proximity, it was nearby, but it was like 45 minutes drive.
Okay.
You know, but if you're a kid, that just might as well be in another state.
You sure?
Know? They were so unhappy. You know, they couldn't go see their friends. She couldn't just take them to see their friends all the time.
Yeah, it's a whole new change.
Yeah, just uprooted them from the only home they'd ever known. And the kids seemed to be pretty miserable.
Oh, no.
And Leanne wanted her kids to be happy. So she agreed to let them move back with their dad.
Oh.
Yeah.
But was he at home now?
I don't know I don't know his schedule at that time.
Okay.
So that's a good question. I'm not sure if maybe he had family nearby that was helping out or how that worked.
Okay.
But she just knew that they didn't want to be gone. So Leanne stayed in Nashville.
Okay.
She let the kids go back and she would go visit them as much as she could. It gave her a lot of independence.
Right.
Not that she ever knew what that was like. Hmm. Because like I said, she never left the small town. She got married young, had babies. And now she's in Nashville.
And she gets to create
by herself
a whole new life.
Yeah. So it kind of led her down a rough path. Oh, I would say she didn't necessarily hang out with the right people. Mm. She dabbled in things. She started using drugs.
Oh.
Likely because she didn't know what to do with her downtime.
Mm.
I mean, suddenly she has no children, no responsibilities. And she's just kind of like, I don't know what to do other than partay.
Okay.
And she was also probably really sad to be away from her kids. So that's probably how she was coping with
it,
trying to keep herself busy, herself around a lot of other people. But eventually the distance became too much for her. She wanted to be their mom, not just a visitor in their life.
Yeah.
She didn't just want to see them every once in a while. She wanted them back in her home. So she ended up moving back to Dixon County.
Okay.
She didn't really want to be there, but she was putting her children's happiness above her own. That's the type of woman she was. So when she got back in town, though, Terry Jr. wasn't just gonna let her have the kids. No.
Oh, man.
No. By now, he had remarried to a woman named Kimberly who went by Gypsy.
Okay.
If that doesn't tell you the rest of the story, I don't know what does. And they had full custody of the kids. Plus, she had struggled with drug use over the years. And you better believe Terry Sr. and Miss Gypsy used that against her.
Sure.
So they made seeing the kids really difficult for her sometimes. They just made things harder than they needed to be. And it was mostly Kimberly that was the instigator of that.
Yeah.
He just went along with it because he was like, yeah, make her pay, you know?
Yeah.
But while Ian was working on building back the connection with her children, her relationship with Terry's new wife, it wasn't great. She was trying to get clean and do all these things at once.
Yeah.
So Kimberly just wanted Leanne to leave. She just wanted her to poof, disappear.
I'm sure that would have been easy.
Yeah. She just was like, this is my family now and you can piss off.
Oh, man.
Nothing Leanne did, though, ever seemed to be good enough for Kimberly. Luckily, it wasn't ultimately up to Kimberly. It was up to the courts to determine how often Leanne could see her kids and under what circumstances. So Leanne was getting clean. She was going to church with her mom. She was making a real conscious effort to stay on the straight and narrow. So how did Leanne end up dead in the water? Police learned that on September 7th, 2002, the night before she was found dead, Leanne was at a local bar watching a football game with some of her friends. She used a friend's cell phone to call her mom and check in. Mm. She was like, hey, I'm out, but I'll see you at church in the morning. Leanne ended up leaving the bar to go home somewhere between 11:30 and midnight that night. And no one could put her anywhere after that.
Hmm.
So police believed she went home.
Okay. Like,
police spoke with her mother and asked, was there anything else she maybe said in that conversation that made her feel, I don't know, suspicious? But there wasn't. There was nothing in that conversation. But there was one more call from Leanne at 5:30 a.m.
Oh.
The day she was found. But her mom wasn't really convinced that it was actually her daughter.
Oh.
It came from her number, but it kind of sounded like a voice whispering, and it didn't really sound like Leanne.
Oh my gosh.
Almost like someone was imitating her.
Really?
Yeah. They said, I'm scared, Mama. Help me.
Oh no.
And she was like, what? She tried calling back. She didn't answer. So she called Leanne's neighbor. This is 5:30 in the morning. So she calls Agnes Sullivan, Leanne's neighbor, to see if Agnes would go over and check on Leanne. When Agnes walked over to Leanne's house, she immediately noticed that Leanne's car was gone.
Oh.
Wasn't even home. So she goes back and she calls her up and says, she's not home. I'll go back and check on her when gets back home. For whatever reason, Leanne's mom didn't just go over there. I mean, I probably would have if it came from her.
Because where would she be at 5:30 in the morning?
I assume it was her home phone that call came from.
Because
she didn't.
Oh, okay.
She used another friend's cell phone at the bar.
Okay.
So that makes me assume that she did not have a cell phone. So if she received another call from Leanne that night, or in the wee hours of the morning, it makes me feel like it was a landline. And it is 2002.
Okay.
So a couple hours went by and the sun had risen. Agnes poked her head out to see if Leanne's car was back, and it wasn't. Well, we know where it was at that time, but Agnes was concerned enough to use her spare key to get into Leanne's house.
Mm, okay.
And she was shocked at what she found inside. Something bad had happened inside that house.
Oh, no.
There was clearly a struggle or a burglary. She wasn't really sure. There was lamps turned over, photos broken, furniture overturned. I mean, glass on the floor. I mean, she was just like,
"Oh, what an eerie
feeling." And there was clothes strewn about too. Oh. So she was like, and she wasn't sure if someone was maybe still in there.
Mm-hmm.
So she called out Leanne, and then she backs out immediately to go call the police. By now, Leanne's body had already been found in the creek. So when detectives got to Leanne's house, because this is all kind of coming together in a relatively, you know, recent time span, they felt like this was a bit much. And I've heard investigators say this before about how genuine robberies are not this messy.
Okay.
Like if someone is looking for valuables, they will look in a place where they think valuables might be, like in a master bedroom closet or maybe like your panty drawer or something, like some place that you feel is discreet, but they're not going to go through every dresser drawer and overturn everything because likely, first of all, they're trying to rob you and get out of there and not get caught.
True. So
spending all this time breaking turning everything.
Turning over furniture, yeah.
Yeah, so it just was, it was too much. Anywho, after carefully re-entering her home and making their initial assessments, they found blood on the door. Then, by making their way carefully through Leanne's home, they found another piece of crucial evidence in a bedroom. There was a broken window.
Oh.
And the glass on the floor was like, a big shard of glass was likely this point of entry for whoever did this.
Somebody broke it from the outside.
Right.
Okay.
Because the glass was on the inside. You're such a detective, Lena. I love you for it.
Thank you.
Well, on one of those pieces of glass was a palm print.
Oh.
And more blood.
Oh.
So police notified Terry, his wife, and Leanne and Terry's two children that Leanne had been found dead. Really, they all just kind of looked like deer in headlights. They just couldn't believe it. They were stunned. They didn't know what to say. I mean, of course, they didn't have the best relationship, but this was wild because they said they had just seen her the day before, the night before. They all sat down with detectives, much like we're sitting here at the kitchen table, and they wanted to talk about, you know, their involvement in Leanne's life or their lack of involvement in her life. The last time they saw her, Kimberly told police that Leanne stopped by their house the night before to get a Klonopin, and Kimberly gave her one. And then this guy shows up in a dark colored Mustang. She couldn't be sure if it was like dark blue, dark green, or black, whatever. Okay. She just couldn't tell. But Kimberly asked Leanne, "Who's that? Who's that guy?" And Leanne said, "Oh, don't worry. That's just Bob."
Oh.
So Kimberly remembered that this guy had salt and pepper hair and didn't know much more about that. Like, couldn't really tell them much more. Terry Sr. and Terry Jr. said, "Yeah, we saw the guy too. And he just seemed kind of weird." They described him exactly like Kimberly had, salt and pepper hair, medium build. But there was one more detail. He had like a Harley Davidson plate on the front of his car.
Okay.
So Kimberly said she had finished chatting with Leanne and Leanne ends up leaving with this guy. So investigators checked into this group of friends that Leanne was hanging out with the night before at the bar. Maybe this guy, Bob, was one of the people there. So they spoke with all of them, but none of them fit the description given by Terry Sr. and Kimberly. Remember that cell phone call to her mom? Well, they were like, "We need to find out whose phone she used."
Yeah.
So the phone belonged to one of her friends, a guy named Robert Smith. He said, you know, they hung out at the bar with their friends. He walked her to her car when she was ready to leave and said goodnight. He went inside. Hmm. She left. And he didn't have much more to give them really other than that because they went their separate ways. I mean,
I'm assuming they asked him how her mood was. Was she just tired? Was she scared of anything?
So she seemed to be in a really good mood that night. They were watching a football game. She was hanging out with her friends.
Yeah.
And then when she called her mom to check in and say, hey, I'm coming to church with you tomorrow, she seemed to be having a good time. They kind of looked at him like, okay, you walked her to her car. And she just left. Okay. But he didn't match the description of this Bob guy.
Okay.
And he drove a black truck.
A truck.
Not a Mustang.
Okay.
So they're like, well, this isn't the guy that they're talking about.
Okay. Right.
There was a little bit of chatter among the group of friends, though, that a detective should talk to a guy named Elvis.
No. In no, Nashville?
Not that. Hey, yes. I didn't put that together. How funny. Maybe he saw her after she left the bar. You see, Elvis fancied Leanne.
Okay.
Yeah. She had kind of kept him in the friend zone for a long time. Mm. But they thought maybe they were starting to be more than friends.
Okay.
So Elvis was very aloof when speaking with the police. You know, yeah, Leanne's my friend. And they were like, kind of, why are you acting so nonchalant? Because the story from all of her friends was that Elvis was in love with her.
Oh.
So now he's being like,
removing himself from the situation.
He's distant.
Yeah, can that I word. Say it?
He's distancing himself from any type of relationship with her, which struck them as odd.
Mm-hmm.
He maintained that they were just friends and his feelings were only friendly towards her and he didn't want anything else. Because they were suspicious, they asked him to take a polygraph test.
Okay.
And he did, and he passed.
Oh.
Yeah. So they were like, huh? You know, sometimes suspicious people really are just weird people.
Yeah. I mean, people can be a little socially awkward.
Yeah. And in investigations, normally it's like the one weird person that stands out is the person you should be looking at. And they're being weird because they're the guy. But they had to move on because there wasn't anything tying him to Leanne in any way.
Okay.
And he passed his polygraph. Detectives attended Leanne's funeral. And we tend to see this quite a bit in active investigations where authorities who are still in the thick of things so early on try to observe guests
right.
or who's there and did they hear or see anything that was kind of concerning. But it was more like what they didn't see that was concerning to them.
Oh.
Because Leanne's ex-husband, Terry Sr., his wife Kimberly, and Leanne's children were not in attendance at her funeral.
None of them.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Whoa.
It's not a good look.
No.
I mean that. Okay. You didn't have the best relationship. That's fine.
But that's the kid's mother.
Right. And if you don't want to go, fine. Like, it makes sense if you don't want to go pay your respects, but send them with a family member for crying out loud.
Oh, wow.
But they just all stayed home. And that's book volumes to investigators as far as like their role in her life or lack thereof. This one big happy family thing that Kimberly was putting on saying, oh, yeah, she stopped by for a Klonopin and I gave her a pill and she left.
If they didn't even care to go to her funeral, what kind of person would go to your house asking for some medication?
I know.
Like you're that close.
Exactly.
No, ma'am.
Exactly. So this story about Leanne coming over around midnight.
Okay, no.
Because now they're saying it was midnight when she came over.
Okay.
So presumably she stopped by their house after the bar.
Right. Okay.
Kimberly made it sound like they were girlfriends.
No.
Like, oh, who's that guy? You know, and she's like, oh, it's just Bob, you know?
Ew.
It wasn't like that at all.
Oh,
it was
no.
not like that at all. It couldn't have been less like that. The minute Leanne moved back home to be close to her children, Terry Sr. and Kimberly tried to freeze her out, and it got really nasty. The investigators uncovered quite a bit of messiness with Terry Sr. and Kimberly.
Okay.
Kimberly called CPS on multiple occasions to tell them that Leanne was not fit to care for her children, that she had no food in the pantry, her kids were starving, never fed.
Oh, no.
They tried to get custody of the kids that way. They tried to tell Leanne she needed to just forfeit custody.
Oh.
They tried to paint her in court as a mother who just dropped her kids off at the dad's and moved to Nashville, which that wasn't the case at all. And let's not forget about the drug use. Oh, baby.
Yeah.
They used that one.
That's a zinger.
Yeah. And Kimberly made it difficult with the children as well. I mean, she told them that their mom wasn't around because she didn't want to be.
Oh, no.
She planted little seeds in their heads, you know, and watered them daily. And to add to the speculation that maybe Kimberly had something to do with Leanne's murder, Leanne's brother gave police a bag of documents that he had found when going through Leanne's things.
Thank you. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. So Leanne had kept all those court documents, every bit of paperwork from the divorce, these custody hearings, battle. She was not done with this fight.
Right.
She was going to fight until she got her kids back. She was not giving up. Upon further inspection, turns out there was a custody hearing scheduled for just days after Leanne was found dead.
Uh-huh. Now we're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Things are clicking into place. With Leanne dead, there would only be one winner in this custody battle. So neighbors of the Mangrums said that Gypsy, aka Kimberly, aka why is her name Gypsy? I don't know, was screaming at her husband and the children. And she was just a nasty woman. Like, neighbors did not like her at all. She was just gross. The man across the street saw Kimberly and the kids cleaning out her black Mustang. Inside and out.
What?
Almost with a fine-tooth comb. And it was
what?
So... Listen, you know when you see someone that, like, never showers, they're always disheveled or whatever, and then you see them cleaning something, and he gets his binoculars out.
Oh.
And he's like, what is she doing? She never cleans. She always looks like a ragamuffin. Like, why? And she's making the children help her clean this car.
No way.
So he gets his binoculars out. He's like, I've got to see what they're doing. And Kimberly's yelling at the kids, get it all. Clean that right there. That's not good enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she's instructing them to get it perfectly clean. Now, the case sort of stalled for a bit, waiting for the forensic results from Leanne's house. We had that blood on the door. We had the blood on that shard of glass and the palm print.
Right.
They could have never, ever imagined that what they would learn when the lab called them in October of 2003 could ever be true.
I have a knot in my stomach because I feel like I know what you're going
to
say.
So the DNA from the blood found on Leanne's door was determined to be a male relative of Leanne.
Oh, no.
After direct comparison, it was matched to her son, Terry Jr.
No, I knew you were going to say that. No.
Yeah. There was also a cigarette butt in Leanne's front yard, which was determined to be mine. Just kidding. Lena was like on edge, and then I said mine. I'm just kidding. It was Kimberly's cigarette.
Lucky. Well, that's not a smart decision to leave.
Idiot.
Wow.
Yeah. And in the way she just said, yeah, I was over there. I flicked a cigarette. So what?
We were best friends. Yeah, I was hanging out.
I was giving her a Klonopin. But wait, there's more.
Of course there is.
The palm print on the broken window. It was Leanne's young daughter.
No.
Alicia.
No. I knew you were going to say that.
Yes.
Candace, I don't like this at all.
I know. Investigators truly thought Kimberly may have done this all on her own, But when the forensic evidence came back, they couldn't believe it that Leanne's own children were involved.
Oh, man, that breaks my heart. Was she asleep? Did she know what was going on? Okay, you're about to tell us.
So detectives arrested Kimberly, Terry Jr., and Alicia, and Terry Sr. for the murder of Leanne Mangrum. They didn't have anything to suggest that Terry Sr. had been a part of it, but come on.
It was a family affair.
It was a family affair.
Ugh.
In Kimberly's interrogation, she blamed the whole thing on Terry Jr. She said that he had written a note stating that he alone was the killer and that she was afraid of him, quite frankly.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, he was a big kid.
Of course she would say that.
He was 15, but he was tall and stocky and...
Wow.
So she was afraid that he was going to kill her too.
Okay. Give me a break.
Terry Jr. admitted that he was with his mom that night down by the creek. They had an argument and he accidentally rolled her Jeep into the water. He said that he didn't report the accident because he was scared of the repercussions. Well, they knew he was outright lying about this. They let him continue, though, to talk. Alicia was actually 11 years old at the time. And she was offered immunity if she would just tell investigators
11.
What really happened that night that her mother was killed.
I couldn't. Do you? 11.
11.
The mind of 11, an 11-year-old.
15. 11 and 15.
Okay, continue.
Alicia admitted to being there when Kimberly attacked her mom with a baseball bat. She said she didn't help in the beating, but she didn't try to help her mom either. Alicia testified before a grand jury that Kimberly forced them to help her murder their mother. According to the kids, Kimberly was very abusive to them. She would burn them with cigarettes.
Okay, I believe that.
Yeah, she one time cut Terry Jr.'s neck with a wire hanger.
Shut up.
Just was vicious. She was literally the evil stepmother. She was also verbally and emotionally abusive to them. She would make them pick up the phone to call their mother and tell her, "I wish you were dead," and then hang up on her.
That is awful.
Yeah. And Kimberly had threatened to kill Leanne multiple times.
Multiple times.
In front of the kids. Yeah. So when Terry Jr. got word that his sister was telling everything, he finally broke down and decided to tell the truth as well. Terry Jr. was asleep that night when Kimberly woke the kids to go over to Leanne's house. When the three of them got there, Leanne wasn't home. So they backed out, started driving back down the street, and then they passed her. Oh. Passes them. She's coming home now.
Okay.
So Kimberly whips the car around and pulled in the driveway right behind Leanne. Didn't even give her a chance to get out of the car. She smashes her window with this baseball bat, starts smashing the window, starts hitting Leanne with this baseball bat through the window. Then she pulls Leanne out of the car into the yard and started wailing on her.
Oh, wow.
And I guess there was a piece of wood nearby, or maybe she brought it, but she ends up getting Terry to start hitting his mother with this big piece of wood.
Oh, Jesus.
So one of the blows to her head knocked her out because she quit moving. Kimberly forced the children to help her load up Leanne into the Mustang, and they left. Terry Jr. followed behind in his mom's Jeep. So he took the car.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So they went to Turnbull Creek and tried to make it look like Leanne had done this to herself. Kimberly shoved a bunch of Klonopin pills in Leanne's mouth and pushed her and the Jeep out into the water. Kimberly then pulled out a knife and told Terry Jr. to go make sure his mother was dead.
What a sicko.
He said he resisted at first, but she was threatening to kill him if he didn't do it. So he waded out to the water where his mother was floating, unconscious. He raised his foot and he put his foot over her neck and pushed her head under the water.
Wow. Oh, man.
Kimberly and the children then went back to Leanne's house to trash the place to make it seem like someone had broken in. This is how dumb they are. Like, they wanted to make it look like Leanne died by suicide and she got robbed. Rough night for Leanne.
Right. I mean, let's just cover all the bases.
They didn't. But by going back to the house, they left all this evidence.
Well,
so thank you for that. That call for help to Leanne's mother just after 5, that was Alicia.
What?
She made that call. And I don't know if she was trying to get her grandma's attention. Like,
that's
call.
What I'm wondering. Like, what was the purpose?
Yeah. So I'm not sure. They didn't go into much detail about the phone call.
Okay.
In the reporting. I think that might have been her last little effort to get her grandma to maybe come over or, you know, alert somebody.
I mean, I like that you're thinking positively of this little girl. I mean, she was 11.
She was 11.
And I'm sure she was scared.
Yeah. I don't even know if Kimberly knew she made that phone call.
Oh, wow.
So they get home at some point in the wee hours of the morning, and they told Terry Sr. what had happened because they were all gone for hours, you know?
Okay.
So they tell Terry Sr. what they did. And though he didn't take part in it, he interfered with the police investigation. Because
of course he did.
He knew good and well what happened that night. And he lied to police saying the story about Bob and that he saw her the night before and this, that,
because
and the
other. Now his kids are involved and he doesn't want them going
to
prison.
Yeah. So while initially they didn't have anything on him and they assumed he must be involved somehow.
Okay.
They got him on that. So.
Right.
Kimberly spent several months in jail, actually, until she posted bail to await her trial.
Mm.
Her husband and Terry Jr. also posted bail. The court was like, y'all don't go nowhere, okay? You promise? And Kimberly's like, I promise.
Okay.
Kimberly hightailed it out of there so fast. They probably saw a puff of air and she was gone.
These people.
The TBI ended up adding her to the 10 most wanted list. And in less than 48 hours, they had tracked her down in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Mm.
A beat cop was driving by the Economy Inn Hotel Resort and Spa and Suites and saw a vehicle matching the description.
Was
of
Bob
Kimberly's.
In it? Was, the, was there a salt and pepper
it
haired man?
It was salt and pepper hair, man. But how good is this cop?
Right?
He just hears about this description. He's driving by this hotel Inn and Suites. And he's like, I'm going to go check that out. And
good on you, sir.
I know, right? He's a hero. So they arrested her just before 2 a.m. And they were like, you know what? No bail for you.
Well.
I mean, if that's how you're going to do us. We granted you bail. And then you
spank, spank.
Bad girl. Now, according to court documents, in addition to the first-degree premeditated murder charge, Kimberly was indicted on additional charges of aggravated burglary, especially aggravated kidnapping.
Especially.
Felony murder and 4 counts of criminal conspiracy. Slap them with the charges.
Okay.
August of 2005, Terry Jr. testified at Kimberly's trial, telling the jury about the abuse and torture he and his sister had suffered at the hands of their wicked stepmother. Her trial lasted about 10 days, and she was found guilty on all charges, was given a life sentence as well as a concurrent sentence of 25 years and additional 6 years.
Okay.
So the 25 years and 6 years are going to be served at the same time after her life sentence.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Fine, do it. Slap him with the charges, because what's going to happen if her life sentence gets overturned somehow? Then she's still got that 25 plus 6 years concurrent.
Yeah.
So that's why I say slap them with the charges, because
exactly.
we know how the justice system
works.
We can't
have it like Canada, like our last episode.
Don't even bring that up, Lena.
Okay, just saying.
That was our Patreon, by the way. You didn't.
Right.
If you're not a patron, I'm sorry. Terry Sr. helped get rid of the baseball bat used to beat Leanne by tossing it in the creek near their house. Terry, I don't know if they ever recovered that bat or verified that, but he admitted to doing it. Terry Sr. pleaded guilty to accessory after the fact. Mm. So now his charge was initially interfering with an investigation, which was probably okay. lesser than accessory. But it's okay because he only got 1 year probation.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
But he's dead now, so it's okay. Yeah, he died. So,
oh,
okay. Yeah, he died. He's dead.
When did he die?
I don't know. I just saw his like obituary and that he died.
Okay.
So he's dead. So.
Wow. But he still got to live a life.
He did.
Okay.
I think he died in 2016, I want to say. So it wasn't many more years.
But I hope he, I hope he found God. That's what I have to say.
Okay. Okay. Well, Terry Jr. was transferred to adult court despite being 15 at the time of his mother's murder.
Good.
And he pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of second degree murder and was sentenced to 8 years in prison.
Okay. If you're capable of killing your mother, I'm sorry. But if I'm having a tug of war in my mind.
It is hard.
Because if he was manipulated and abused, that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. It's so hard. It's so hard to say shoulda, woulda, coulda. Like he should have done this. But
right.
it's also like she threatened him with a knife and said, if you don't kill your mom, I'm going to kill you.
Wow.
He was bigger than her. He could have overpowered her.
He could have gone straight to the police.
He could have ran.
Do not pass go. Go straight to the police.
Yeah, and you know what? Alicia could have called 911 instead of called her grandmother.
I mean, but it's 11 years old.
I know. They're children, and they were psychologically tortured for years. It's
yeah.
just, it's so sad. Well, Kimberly has appealed, which
sure she has.
Has been denied, and she maintains her innocence to this day.
Okay.
There is actually a petition for Kimberly's release.
Who is
that? Was so undoubtedly created by Kimberly herself, given all the misspellings and inaccurate writing style.
Okay.
It has a whopping 35 signatures that belong to probably made up people.
Oh.
Made up by Kimberly.
Sure.
I know one of them has a fake profile because the name is Leanne Mangrum.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. So it's Leanne herself from beyond the grave creating this.
You cannot even make this stuff up.
It's disgusting. This woman is ludicrous. The comments on this petition are scathing and really interesting to read. I'll post the petition in the show notes so you can enjoy.
Oh my gosh.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And that's all I have for you in this case.
I mean,
her children helped in her murder. And they are out living their lives right now.
My heart hurts for Leanne. I mean, she's in a better place, I would hope.
Mm-hmm.
This Kimberly is the type of person that does, if she's not in prison, she needs to be in an insane asylum.
Mm.
She obviously has some mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Going on. I don't know what to
this
say.
This is like classic personality disorder. I mean, she is She wants it all, but she's not going to be happy with any of it.
Mm-mm.
She treated the children like they were garbage, but she wanted them to be her garbage.
Yeah.
Like her minions, her little slaves. It's just terrible.
And you just have to wonder if Terry Sr. was like, oh, I made a big mistake, or if he was happy living with her like that.
You know, maybe he was still working that job where he was gone a lot and he didn't see a lot of the stuff. I know that Alicia changed her name.
I would too.
Because I saw her listed, which I assume it was her, listed in Terry Sr.'s obituary.
Oh, as his sister.
No.
Oh.
She was listed as his daughter because one
oh,
of
Terry
his,
Sr. Okay.
Yeah, Terry Sr., one of his other daughters, I think his older daughter, died in a car accident. So it said preceded in death by his daughter. I think her name was Melissa. But the children listed, it was only Terry Jr. and this, I'm not going to say her name.
Yeah, don't do that.
Because I don't want to do that. But yeah, she changed her name, which I would too. And if I was Terry Jr., I would change my name as well.
Yeah. Holy moly. I don't like this story at all.
It's terrible.
And yeah, it's shocking, like you said at the beginning. I'm still shocked that there are people in this world like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting and disturbing. And it's like, why can't we all just love each other and get along? And these people are sick.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really, really sad. Because, I mean, I'm so torn. Like you said, I'm going back and forth that, how could they do that? How could they agree to this? How could they participate? But then they were children.
Yeah. And I can give some leniency to Alicia. I don't know.
I know. It's hard. It's so hard because he was a bulky 15-year-old.
Mm.
I mean, she said she was scared of him. She was not scared of him, but he could have taken her down.
I mean, if I could, like, just talk to them and see, get a feel for them, I don't know.
But you know what? The real punishment is they have to live with that for the rest of their life.
They have to live with that.
No matter what they do with their life, they may go on to run a convent.
Okay. Sure.
But that is always their past. They were a part of their mother's murder. It doesn't matter what they do.
Yes, it is a part of their past.
And that will be a torment to them, I'm sure.
Yes, but with their young age and the other experiences in their lives, I think that they could change to be productive people.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying that their real punishment is that they have those memories in their minds.
And they don't have their mother when they could have had a relationship with her.
They could have had. She was trying so hard to be with them again in the right way. And
the yikes.
Yeah.
Well, so, thank you for telling Leanne's story. Rest in peace, Leanne. And
fly high, angel.
That was not good, but we're going to do it again sometime.
Yep. We'll see you next time, guys.
Bye.
But not next week. But
oh,
the
yeah.
Following week.
So sorry.
So bye.
Bye for now.
Bye for now. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com.
Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.